Good morning. This last week, I'm sure many of us have had heavy hearts for some of the events that have happened in Paris. And I'm sure many of us have been praying about that and it's wore us down a little bit. We live in a world that is filled with corruption and is filled with all kinds of injustice and things like that. One of the encouraging things in the midst of all of that is to see the people that are doing like the candlelight vigils, even until 4 o'clock in the morning over in Paris. I think it was Mr. Rogers, I'm not making a joke about that, but I think it was Mr. Rogers that would say in his show that whenever you see a disaster happen, look for all the people who are helping. Whenever something like this happens, there's always people praying. There's always people being supportive. There's always people making sacrifices. And there are still blessings in this world that is filled with corruption and darkness. And one of the ways that I'm convinced we experience some of those blessings is through the practice of hospitality. Last Sunday night, we talked about, in our evangelism workshop, we talked about receiving infants in Christ. In other words, how to embrace people with open arms who are new Christians. And one of the things that we talked about in that is that hospitality plays a big role in that whole business of bringing people in. And so in this lesson, I said last week that I was thinking about doing a lesson on hospitality, and that's what I want to do this morning. But to set this up, I just want to make an observation. Since I've been here, it's been a year and a couple months now, so many of you have made comments about how this church was 20, 30 years ago at El Cajon. I've heard a lot of comments about it. And it's exciting to hear you guys talk about it because you guys get this big smile on your face and you remember how often people had each other into one another's homes. And you remember how many times you guys would have game nights throughout the week and how often you guys would get together. And it's touching to hear stories like that, especially after working with Barry, and he would tell me about how awesome it was being with all of you and how much time you guys spent together and how hospitable everybody was. This is a practice, this is a discipline for the Christian life that makes huge impacts in other people's lives. And there are many people that are sitting here in this room this morning who back in the day were greatly impacted by this practice. And even today, there are people that are still being affected in this local church by this practice, by those who are doing it. So when we talk about hospitality, there's a lot of different ways that I was thinking about approaching this, but I'm just going to approach this under these four headings. We're going to talk about the biblical understanding of hospitality, examples of hospitality, challenges to hospitality or challenges of hospitality, and then motivations for it. So that's going to be kind of what we look at in this lesson. Let's start out with the biblical understanding of hospitality. This week, when I was thinking about these concepts, one of the things that I did is I did a Google search for hospitality. And when I did that, I found some interesting things. The thing that came up most often was the hospitality industry. So if you do a Google search for hospitality, it's usually going to be linked with industry, with a way of making money. One of the websites that I actually found was a website where you could submit your resume so you could find a job in the hospitality industry. Here were some of the jobs. You could be a waiter or a waitress. They included a health club, like a workout facility. Working at one of those constitutes hospitality. Being a cook at a restaurant, working on a cruise ship was also one of the examples. And this gives us some clues as to how our culture thinks about hospitality. By the way, can you think of a building that people go to that has hospitality in it, hospital? What's happened in our culture is things that used to be done in the home has become industrialized, where people used to have people into their homes. People used to take care of other people, medically speaking, in the homes. And then it became in industry. Not that that's all bad. Hospitals do a lot of good things. We're better off because of them. But I'm just bringing this up because in our culture, that's the way that people think about it. Now, let's see how the Bible kind of confronts that concept of hospitality. In the New Testament, there's two Greek words that are used for hospitality. And both of them are really similar. Both of them pretty much mean the same thing. So I'm just going to bring up one of the words that the Greek uses for hospitality. And the word is philoxenos. Philoxenos. And if you're starting to think about how this word is broken up, your mind is starting to go to various places. Philo is love, right? Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. What is the second word, though? The second word is xenos, and that means foreigners. Or people who are different than you. Have you guys ever heard of the word xenophobia before? Xenophobia is the fear of the warrior princess, right? No. It's the fear of people who are different than you, which may be the warrior princess. She's pretty different. But here's the concept. Here's the idea of biblical hospitality is it's the love of people who are different than you. It's the love of people who maybe you aren't familiar with. And think about how challenging this concept is. You know what's hard about loving people who are strangers? The thing that's hard about it is that strangers are strange, right? They have different hobbies. They're different ages. They have different skin color. They have different cultural backgrounds. They have all kinds of differences from me, and I typically enjoy spending time with people who are most similar to me. If you're into the same kinds of things that I'm into, then I really want to spend time with you. But if you're different than me, then that scares me. Then I have xenophobia. But the biblical attitude of hospitality begins with this idea that I'm willing to embrace, I'm willing to love anybody, no matter what differences they have. Recently, Samantha and I were over at somebody's house, and when we were leaving, the couple said to us, they said, "Do you guys know who the truly educated people in life are?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to hear what your idea is, because I'm sure yours is better than mine." And so they said, the truly educated person is the person who doesn't necessarily have all of the credentials and all of the pieces of paper on their wall. The truly educated person is somebody who can embrace anybody, no matter how short or tall, no matter how successful or unsuccessful, no matter what skin color, no matter what cultural background. The person who's truly educated is the person who has this attitude of hospitality. Now, when we understand that hospitality begins with a mindset, it helps us understand that simply doing things that look hospitable is not necessarily hospitality. It's an attitude that grows itself out in actions, but just having the actions does not mean that I'm practicing hospitality. For example, here's a passage in Proverbs 23, 6 and 7. It says, "Do not eat the bread of a man who is stingy. Do not desire his delicacies. For he is like one who is inwardly calculating. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you." Here's somebody in Proverbs, this little scene that's painted for us, of this person who's doing the deed that looks like hospitality. He's got people in the home, right? And they're enjoying the food, the delicacies. But notice that as you're eating at this man's table, he says the right things. He says, "Eat and drink," but his heart's not with you. I don't know what the motive for having you over was, but it wasn't out of a genuine love for people who were different. That's not what it was. So when we understand that biblical hospitality begins with a mindset and it begins with an attitude, we can understand, therefore, that hospitality doesn't necessarily have to happen in the home. And don't we typically say if you're practicing hospitality, you have to have your doors open? Having people in your home is a great way for hospitality. But there are some people who can't have people in their home for whatever reason. Are they barred from practicing hospitality? No. You can still go to lunch with somebody. You can still get coffee with somebody. You can still include somebody in some activity that you're doing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the home, but it's an attitude that works itself out in daily living. Now, when we talk about these concepts, one of the things that's important to bring up about this is that if we understand that hospitality involves people who are different, there's implications in that. The implication is this. If I just am inviting towards people who I already get along with really well and who are already really close to me, and I just hang out with my family, for example, or I just hang out with my two or three really good friends, and I have them in my home all the time, I can't claim that I'm practicing biblical hospitality. I can't. Now, it's great to do those things. I'm not minimizing that in one way whatsoever. But if I am only including people who are my favorites, if I am only including people who are just family, then I can't claim that I'm practicing this discipline of Christian living. Now, I will say a caution with all of this. There are people in the world who are wicked, and we have to be careful, right? We have to be careful who we allow into our lives. We have to be discerning in that. But I will say that with that caution, we can't use that as an excuse to not practice this. And there might be temptation for me to use that as an excuse. Now, with all of that being said, is it possible that there's some of us in this room who are still strangers to one another? Because when we think of hospitality, we can, our minds can immediately go towards people outside of these walls, and there's a lot of truth in that. But is it possible that within these four walls, that there are some of us who are still strangers to one another? We have people that have recently placed membership. Perhaps you have worshiped here for years and years and years, but there are people that you haven't or I haven't made the effort to get to know very well. And so the truth is that there's a lot of work that can be done in any local church. I'm not pointing this one out in particular. In any local church, there's a lot of work that can be done hospitality-wise within the four walls of with the people that meet here. So I just wanted to say all of that by way of kind of introduction to get a biblical understanding of what hospitality is, and it's a really challenging concept. So I want us to look at some examples of hospitality to maybe sink our teeth into this concept a little bit deeper, so we can see maybe what it looks like a little bit. There's a story in the Old Testament with Elisha. He's the prophet who came after Elijah. And we're not going to have time to look at this whole story, but I love this story. The scripture is going to be on the board here. Look at 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. It says, "One day Elisha went on to Shunem, where a wealthy woman lived, who urged him to eat some food, so whenever he passed that way, he would turn in there to eat food. And she said to her husband, 'Behold now, I know that this is a holy man of who is continually passing our way. Let us make a small room on the roof with walls and put there for him a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp, so that whenever he comes to us, he can go in there.'" I want you to picture this scene. For whatever reason, Elisha the prophet keeps passing by this town, and he comes, he keeps walking past this house of this woman. And we don't get the woman's name. It says that she's wealthy. What that could mean is that she was prominent. That's not saying that in order to practice hospitality, I have to be wealthy. Anybody can do it, in one way or another. But as Elisha's passing back and forth, she wants to go ahead and make a room for him to stay in. But I want us to notice, first of all, that the woman had to urge Elisha to eat. What did that look like? Like, that implies that Elisha had tried to turn her down at times. He would walk by, and she would have a plate full of cookies, or I don't know what it was, and she would say, "Hey, Elisha, eat some of this." And he would go, no, I don't want to put you out. No, I don't want to burden you. I don't know what he was saying. I'm just thinking about sometimes what I think about that. And so he kept saying that, but she urged him. Have you ever met that kind of woman who just forces you to get over yourself and eat some food? Like, if you're going to walk by this woman's house, you're going to eat. And so she forces Elijah to just get over himself. But look at this conversation that she has with her husband. She goes up to her husband and says, look, there's a man of God that keeps walking to and fro, back and forth. This is what we got to do, husband. We got to make a spare room in the house for him. How encouraging is that? Have you ever known Christians that whenever they're buying a house, they specifically want to get a spare room for people? Or have you ever known Christians that decide that they want to be more hospitable, so they actually rearrange their house to make that possible? And this husband doesn't object to that. Can you imagine? Imagine this in your life. Let's say that your wife comes up to you and she's always telling you that more people are going to be staying, more people are going to be coming over. As the husband, how are you feeling about that? Let's flip it. Let's say that the husband is always inviting people over and always being hospitable. Wives, how would you feel about that? This is a couple that are working together in this way. And they actually have a conversation about it, and they work through it together, and they build the room in the house. And you know what the truth is in the rest of the story, but we don't have time to look at it? In this story, this woman is barren. She hasn't had any children. And Elisha comes up to her one day, and he says, look at all this kindness that you've shown me. What can I do for you? And she says, I really want to have a child. And so he prays for it or something like that. And eventually, she's given a child. Now, there's difficulties with that because the child dies, but then Elisha raises him back from the dead. But do you know what the truth was for this woman? She was the one who was blessed. When she decided to do all of this work in her home to rearrange things and urged him to eat, ultimately, she was blessed. Now, she blessed Elisha too. There's no doubt about that. But the truth was, when she was having this kind of attitude, she ended up being blessed. And how many of us know the truth behind that? You ask somebody out for lunch. You ask somebody out for coffee. And maybe you're thinking, maybe I'm thinking, these people need encouragement. These people, whatever. And then when they leave the house or you leave the coffee shop, you're thinking, man, I needed that. Man, that person helped me quite a bit. And that's one of the cool things about this practice of hospitality. When I first became a Christian, I was baptized and there was a family, Clay and Mary Cantrell. Clay is Andy's brother. Andy preached here a few weeks ago. And when I first became a Christian, they said, Eric, you can always come into our house whenever you need to. So I lived 45 minutes from the church building. And so between services, I just hung out at their house, like every Sunday. And the benefit of that for me as a new Christian is I finally got to see how a Christian husband loves his Christian wife. And I got to see qualities in a godly Christian woman and how she respected her husband. And we'd sit around the couch between services and we'd have all kinds of conversations that have helped me spiritually in so many different ways. Whenever Samantha and I are traveling, one of the things that we try to do is we get in contact with people who know people. You know how that works. And we call somebody up and we say, hey, do you know anybody in Oklahoma? We don't want to have to pay for the hotel. We really like to get to know new Christians that we've never met before. Do you know anybody that we can stay with? And so we find people to stay with. When Samantha and I were moving to Tennessee, this was about 9 days after we were married, there's a preacher in Indiana named Gary Fisher. And I had listened to a lot of his Bible classes online. And they've helped me a lot. And I sent him a Facebook message and I said, hey, my wife and I just got married. We're on our way to Tennessee and we're going to be living there for a few years working with Barry. And I said, can we stay with you? And he said, yeah, that'd be great. I wanted to stay with him. I wanted to pick his mind about a few things. I still call him from time to time, get some advice. And one of the things that I learned when I was with him was when we were leaving his house, we packed up our cars. And we were all standing in the entryway, and he said, well, Eric, I think we should go ahead and have a prayer. And he prayed that God would give us safe travels and that the work in Tennessee would go well. Now, what I learned in that was that prayer wasn't just simply a way of beginning a Bible class or ending a service. It wasn't like a bumper. Prayer, it can be spontaneous, and it can actually be dealing with real-life situations, and that was just something that stuck out to me when I was with him. When Samantha and I lived in Tennessee, and whenever we would drive back to Minnesota, there was a town exactly halfway. And it was Normal, Illinois. That's the name of it. A lot of good people there. The church there is really great. And we stayed with Scott and Susie Miller. And the first time I ever stayed with them, they had a girl that was in, I think, eighth grade, and then a son who was in sixth grade at the time, if I remember right. And we were all sitting around their table having dinner, and do you know what they were talking about, the kids? The two younger kids were both trying to teach somebody the gospel. Together. And this is what they were talking about around the table. They were saying, well, we've studied this with them, we've talked about this concept with them, but they've asked these questions and we don't know how to deal with these questions. Can you help us at all? I have never met two middle school siblings that are working together to teach somebody the gospel. I've never seen that before except them. And so whenever Samantha and I stayed with them, do you know what we did? We said, teach us how to raise our kids. Teach us how to raise our kids. How did you do it? How did you do it? And we've learned things from them that I pray and I hope will affect Asher. Now, the reason that I'm bringing up these examples of the lady in the town of Shunem and the examples in our own life is because I want us to see that every one of us in this room has the power to bless other people. We do. If you have a cup of cold water to give somebody, you've offered a blessing to them that will make a difference. But if we're willing to open up our lives and open up our hearts to people who are different than us, we can make a difference in other people's lives. And there's some people in this room that might not believe that. And it's a lie. God can use every one of us to bless other people. Now, those are some examples of hospitality. I want to talk about a few challenges to this concept, reasons why this is challenging. There are about five passages in the New Testament that specifically use the words for hospitality. Two of them deal with the need for elders to be hospitable, so really there's basically four passages in the New Testament that talk about this. But these passages help us understand some of the challenges behind this discipline. So here's one of the challenges. Hospitality is easily neglected. It's easily neglected. Look at what Hebrews 13:2 says. It says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. The fact is, if I'm not conscious about this, and I'm not pursuing this, it's going to be something that I won't be engaged with. Which is why I think Romans 12:13 says, seek to show hospitality. This is something that we must pursue. Now, why is it easily neglected? Why is it that I neglect hospitality? Part of it is that I don't feel like I have the time to do it. Part of it is that I feel like my schedule is already so busy that I don't have the time to engage in this discipline or this practice. But maybe sometimes I need to rearrange my schedule. Maybe sometimes I need to reprioritize. Maybe sometimes the reason that I neglect this is because I already have a group of people that I really like hanging out with, and I'm content with that circle of people, and I don't really want to have it enlarged because I don't have the energy to handle that. And maybe that's sometimes the reason that I neglect it. There are various reasons why it can be neglected, but that's one of the challenges to it. Here's another challenge to it. It can be taxing. It can be taxing. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9 says, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now, why does Peter have to say do this without grumbling? The reason is because we grumble about things or we complain about things that become taxing to us. I want you to think about who's writing this, by the way. This is Peter writing this. Do you remember any stories in the Gospels where Peter was hospitable? Do you remember that story where there's the four guys who are carrying the paralyzed man? And they decide to tear the roof open? That was Peter's house. Do you think Peter understood the temptation to complain when being hospitable? Do you imagine when all those people left, he could have said to his mother-in-law and his wife, they tore the roof open, we're never having people over again. A couple weeks ago, the people that told us what a truly educated person is, when we were there, I was drinking coffee, and I was flailing my arms as I was telling a story or something, like I typically do, and I spilled the coffee on their nice table runner. It was a really nice table runner, too, and I felt really bad about it. Do you suppose they would have had reason to complain? Knowing them, I know they didn't. But sometimes hospitality can be challenging or taxing because sometimes couches get scratched. And sometimes coffee spills. And sometimes roofs get torn open, I guess. But Peter says, as you engage in this, don't complain about it. Have you ever heard anybody complain about hospitality? Sometimes the complaint looks like this. We are the only people doing this. Why isn't anybody else doing it? Sometimes that's the complaint, right? Other times the complaint is, these people stay too long. And I'm too tired. Sometimes the complaint is, we don't have a good enough house. And we don't have, we're not good cooks. Have a potluck. There's all kinds of complaints that people can have, and I've had. Is everything okay? Oh, it's a spider. Okay. All right. All right. Everything's okay. All right, so it can be taxing. Here's the third challenge to it. The third challenge to hospitality is that it costs us. Titus chapter 1, verses 7 and 8, this is the passage about elders, but this applies to all Christians. It says, for an overseer as God's steward must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. Notice how verse 8 begins. He says, but hospitable. Whenever you see the word but in the Bible, he's drawing a contrast. What is it in contrast to in this text? The thing right before it is that an elder must not be greedy for gain. In other words, the thing that must not be constantly on their mind is how I can make another buck. How can I get richer? How can I increase my money? How can I do this? Why can't an elder have that attitude? Because if that's the attitude, you're never going to show hospitality because it costs money, doesn't it? It costs money. And so, if we're going to engage in this, one of the things that I have to understand is sometimes I have to dig deeper into my wallet to make it happen. But the payoff is better than whatever I'm giving up. Because it's helping to create a loving atmosphere. And it's helping to create a family in Christ. The principle behind hospitality begins with me understanding that everything I have really belongs to the Lord. And I'm just a steward of it, which is what he says in verse 7 there. Okay, so those are some challenges to hospitality. I want to conclude this lesson by talking about a couple motivations for this discipline. And sometimes people will talk about the carrot and the stick. You know what the idea behind that is? The carrot is like the good motivation, and the stick is like the you better do this or else kind of motivation. When it comes to hospitality, there's the carrot motivation and there's the stick motivation. So let's start out with the stick motivation and then we'll end on a happy note. So here is the stick motivation. Part of our final judgment will be based out of this practice. One of the things that Jesus will judge us on is whether or not we are hospitable. Look at Matthew chapter 25, verses 41 through 46. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they will also answer saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? Then he will answer them saying, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Notice the picture here. You've got these people, and in the earlier verses he separated the sheep from the goats. And he's talking to the goats here, and he's saying, depart from me. Now what's the reason? There were people who were hungry. There were people who were in need. There were people who were strangers. There were people who just needed friendship. And you shut your heart to them. And you didn't care. And notice what they say in this text. They say, Lord, when did we ever see the possibility of us showing this to other people? Notice that these people are so wrapped up in their own lives and maybe their own circle of friends that they thought they were maybe doing this. In verse 44 is the scariest part to me. When they say, they answer and they say, Lord. These people aren't non-Christians. These people aren't atheists. These are people who lived lives claiming that Jesus was their Lord. And they were self-deceived. And this is intimidating to me. Because sometimes I can get so wrapped up in my own life that I stop thinking about the needs of other people. Sometimes I can get so wrapped up in my own things that I never consider the person who has no friends. And I never consider the person who is in need. Let's talk about the stick or the carrot motivation. Because when we talk about this motivation for hospitality, what I'm not saying is that if we just start doing this, we'll earn our salvation. That's not what I'm saying. That's not the point. The question is this. What would ever motivate somebody truly to ever do this? What would ever cause somebody to willingly engage in this practice and have the kind of heart that would not shut their lives from other people? Look at Leviticus chapter 19, verses 33 and 34. The text says, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you will not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord. What is God wanting the Israelites to do way back in Leviticus? He's basically saying here, I want you to show hospitality to the stranger who sojourns among you. What's the reason for it? He's saying because you guys, you Israelites, used to be strangers, but God welcomed you. This is what the Bible teaches. Jesus was in heaven, in his home, right? In his mansion, as we sometimes sing about. And he left that place, and he suffered outside the gate. That's Hebrews chapter 13. He lost hospitality, didn't he? For what reason? So that we who are strangers to God could be welcomed in. Because truth be told, I was a stranger to God. Because of my sin, because of the hardness of my heart, I was strange to God. I was estranged to him. And the gospel teaches that Jesus was willing to lay down his life, and he wanted so badly for me to be able to dine at his table one day. And he wanted so badly for us to be able to be with him in his home so that he could show us hospitality. The people who have impacted me with hospitality are people who have first realized that they were strangers to God and God welcomed them in. And when that has impacted their heart, and the more I pray that it impacts my heart, it causes people to just be welcoming to everybody. What are some things that we can do this week? Have a family into your home that you don't know very well. Ask somebody to get coffee that you don't know very well. Include somebody in some group activity that you regularly do. Build more bridges. And we'll see that God will do amazing things in a local church that practices this. If there's anything that we can do for you, this is an opportunity for you to accept the hospitality that God has for them. But in this church, we're striving to be a family. And many of you have shown us hospitality. Speaking of hospitality, we have the Devo tonight at the Webers. I'm thankful for them and everybody else who's opened up their home for that. But this is an opportunity for us to examine our hearts, for me to examine my heart, and see how much the Christian gospel has impacted my daily living. If there's anything that we can do for you, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.